The horror of Infinity Pool is, what if you lived in a country and these rich people came and murdered you for fun? I'm Gabby.
And I'm James.
That's great. And we're the ghouls next door. Talk about spooky stuff. Like being on vacation in a country you don't belong in. And you shouldn't be there.
Yeah. And when you go there, you murder people and suck all around. Just really the worst. It was like if you had, so what is the ridiculous show? You mentioned it.
White Lotus.
It's like White Lotus with like murder plus like extra murder. Like murder plus in a very dramatic fashion.
Yeah. It's like if White Lotus was trying to be a horror movie and not as good.
Yeah.
They're pretty similar. Yeah. Actually, the horror of Infinity Pool is, what if you lived in a country and these rich people came and murdered you for fun?
Yeah. And just like exploited your land and culture and stole all your stuff and then built a giant wall with barbed wire at the top, kind of like what's happening in Texas presently, but for the whole state of Texas, instead of a resort. Yeah. It's just like that. It's just like what you said, you know? It's just like that.
We're the media literacy show from Horror Lens, where we explore the real life, historical, cultural influences behind our cinematic fears. And closing out our New Year, New Me series, we are covering another Brandon Cronenberg film. This time it is Infinity Pool.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, about, it's like rich people, am I right?
Yeah, it's like rich people plus white supremacy plus racism, like all the usual things. You're just like, ee. And also like, what if you could benefit from all those things without consequences except for the death of your soul, you know?
Right.
It's that.
Who needs that?
Who needs your soul when you have money?
Yeah, he loves doing that. It's either you lose your soul for your job, or for fame, or for fortune.
Yeah.
That is popularity, I guess.
Yeah. That's like his vibe.
Yeah. Is what would people do for the lengths that people go for certain things, and to be seen in certain ways.
Yeah.
That's definitely his vibe. Yeah, this film is definitely like, If the film series Hostel, like if one of the people got in on the game, you know, instead of being sold, like they got to do it.
Yeah.
And it was like, look, you could be evil too.
Yeah. It's very much like I suffered, so you should too. It's giving that vibe. It's very, I'm not going to talk crap about an entire generation. I'm just like it gives energy of parents.
Yeah. For sure.
When you know, your parents suck, not like when they're nice.
Yeah.
Yes. I love my mom. I'm just saying.
I love my rich man hat.
Oh no. Hide my shame under this hat.
Yeah, it's the yeah, when we were writing the script, I was telling Kat that I hadn't quite figured out if I liked the film. And then by the end of the script, I realized that I didn't. But it did take me a while. Like, I really did have to sort through, because it similar to Possessor, right? There's a very obvious plot, right? It's very obvious what it's trying to tell you. And then there's also some subliminal things that happen in the the background, or, you know, the messages can be layered and it takes some unpacking. And but for the bulk of it, you know, every article had the same thing to say about it. And I was like, yeah, it is that, but I think we're missing it. Cause there are, like, the ghouls have covered rich people suck as a theme, mm-hmm. Many times. You know, we've covered Ready or Not, and that was super fun. We covered The Hunt even, which is more like political than it is, you know, rich people, but it, that kind of comes hand in hand because the rich people are able to do something like The Hunt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's a conversation that's been had in a majority of different ways. And this was his approach. And so I think it was, in ways it's different, and in other ways it's very much the same.
Yeah. I'm still like a little on the fence, like, cause it had like a big, it impacted me deeper than I thought I was going to. Like, I just kept seeing like red string on a wall. Like, I was just like, this is like Infinity Pool. And then I was like, okay, so like, it wasn't bad in that, like, it did make me think about stuff mm-hmm. that like I might have already been thinking about, but just like in a different way. But I didn't enjoy the process of watch, like, because it just, I don't think it had, I am a little baby when it comes to gore and kind of just like humans doing the worst thing, mm-hmm. which is ironic because we watch horror movies all the time. But yeah, it just, it hit me in a way that did make impact, but was also like not fun. Mm-hmm. to experience. And I don't know how I feel about it still. I don't think I liked it, but I, because it like actually did like make me think a lot, I'm like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe in a week I'll have a different opinion, but we don't have that kind of time.
yeah And I think, like, for me, it's like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. And I, you know, I'm glad you made it. I'm glad. And I think it is speaking to people, and I, you know, it says what it says. I was just like, you know, I'm still allowed to not like it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm still allowed
to be like, well, whatever.
It wasn't for you.
Whatever. You know, and that, to be fair, so we have had conversations where it's like, rich people suck, but there are a lot of really impactful, like, just traumatizing horror films specifically about rich people suck, and just like, even worse than that, they're monsters, right? There are movies out there who very easily could fit into any number of our series and definitely deserve like a, you know, critical eye on them. I just don't want my eyes on them.
Yeah.
So there are films we have not covered and we won't ever cover because I just refuse to watch them because it's not for me. I know what it is. I know the horrors of that, and seeing it in that way almost feels, and that's something you'll talk about, Kat, in your section, but it does feel kind of like a scapegoat, like we're monstrosizing them, being like, look what the rich people do in secret. It's like, it's not okay, but what about what they do in our face?
Public, yeah.
what do they do overtly loud and without any, you know, feelings of it? Like, yeah. I get what you're saying. And we will cover, you know, in our next series, we'll have a whole conversation about the impact of like one person or one family or one company on humanity, right? Mm-hmm. And just the decisions that they make about access and other kinds of power that can greatly impact people. And I think that is something that I found so much more like that stuck with me and got to me in a way visually and narratively that this mm-hmm. film just didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't care. And I was like the people I cared about weren't there. And mm-hmm. so I was like, you're missing that whole plot. And I think that's kind of gonna happen because
of the lens.
Exactly. Same thing again, just kind of bringing it right back to the beginning of the series, which feels like forever ago, but Don't Worry, Darling. It was limited because of the people who were making it had a very limited life. And viewpoints and struggles. So I think this kind of suffers in the same way. It's like, how much can you really say?
Yeah.
How much can you really critique? Like, it's like, yeah, what is it? You have one finger pointing at someone, you got three pointing back at you.
Yeah.
You'll be like, you. With all your fingers.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we hop in? I don't think my section's super long, but it, who knows?
We'll say it's good. Say your words, friend.
Let me speak my truth. So, Infinity Pool is from 2023, and it's about James and M. Foster are enjoying an all-inclusive beach vacation in the fictional island of Letolka when a fatal accident exposes the resort's perverse subculture of hedonistic tourism, reckless violence, and surreal horrors. And it's directed by Brandon Cronenberg. And I'm going to be real. That's the first time I actually read what that said, that description.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, the resort's perverse subculture.
I mean, I guess it's both.
Yeah, and we're missing some things here. It's not wrong. The resort. Okay, let's do it.
Say your words, friends.
Okay. Infinity Pool is a compelling science fiction film that scrutinizes the opulent lifestyle of the 1%, delving into their sinister nature of overindulgence. And the story follows James, who's played by Alexander Skarsgård, who is a writer grappling with writer's block after the failure of his second novel, and his wife, Em, played by Cleopatra Coleman, who's an heiress to a publishing house, Fortune, in the publishing firm that published his book. So there's some connection there, right? During their vacation at an exclusive island resort in the fictional Letolka. So this resort is seemingly charming, though eerily distant from the community outside the barbed fences. Like it's like barbed wire.
Like, yeah, it's like giant wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, you know, and it's, there's a lot of scenes in the beginning when they're establishing this resort that is just straight given season one of White Lotus, like down to like the dancing, the traditional masks and cultures being commodified, even the breakfast and kind of like having it in this communal area, but no one's talking to one another. It's kind of just like, and they're complaining about it, but it's like inclusive, you know, that's like literally that's what White Lotus is. Yeah. So just expect that. That's what the beginning of this film is just White Lotus with Alexander Skarsgård, which I would watch. James and M. Foster are unsettled by this disconnection, but try to make the most of their trip before finding themselves wrapped up in a European couple, Gabby, who's played by Mia Goth, and Alvin, who's played by Jaleel Lesfair. We've, I believe, mentioned it before, but definitely when I was watching, I've been to a resort all of one time, and it was with very rich people, and it was awful. Yeah. I like fought to go to like the actual community. I was like, can we go into town? And it was just like, why would I spend all this money to sit at a pool?
Yeah, you could sit in a pool anywhere.
Be on a beach. Like, yeah, you're like drinking. Like the fancy drinks and just lounging by a pool. I just like, I could be anywhere doing this. I didn't have to take a plane.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? So I was like,
or you could at least like, ethically do it somewhere else where it isn't as.
Ugh. Yeah. Ugh, I hate it. Resorts dead. So the quirky couple, Mia Goth and her husband, lure M and James out to a local beach. They do leave the resort, though it is really frowned upon. It's heavily warned against. Like, they talk about how it's like unstable out there. It's dangerous, which was part of why I was super thankful that Cronenberg made this a fictional place instead of like villainizing it a real place. It also gave him the leeway of like making an absurd premise of what happens here. But like, having this like, violent community right outside, don't leave, is a little different. I think they didn't really need that. I don't think anyone would have left anyway.
Yeah.
And I'll talk why that's like just made it more alluring. But so they go out to this like beach and things happen already.
Yeah.
Right. Before things get crazy, stuff has already happened where James is starting to fray.
Yeah.
And so on the way back, they are very drunk. And James is working through some things he just experienced, feeling very violated and also maybe just like guilty, nervous, lots of emotions happening and drunk. Yeah. So he hits and kills a local man who's walking across the street in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. That also could have been the middle of the night. It could have been like a regular day, but like it gets dark early, you know? So when he awakes the next morning, he is immediately arrested and taken to a disorienting Stark police station. It's just like industrial,
yeah.
be a good word for it. And shockingly, he learns of his death sentence. And this is in the trailer, so it's not really like a spoilers, but we will be spoiled.
Yeah, we will be spoiled.
But they're like, you gotta die. And he's like, what? Which is like, it's such an insane, like I get really sensitive when police are involved in films, mm-hmm. and especially when they're like coercing and manipulating people. And even though like, you know, he, like his wife is the one who's rich, he's not rich. He's still like a white man with some power. So he's not, you know, the usual victim, but he doesn't speak the language. He can't read the documents that he's signing. He just has to go with what they tell him. Yeah. And I was like, there's a chance that like he, like, because they say for a fee we'll do this thing, right? They never tell him how much the fee is, and there's no guarantee that they've even talked to his wife to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much that's questionable, and it's just like that just gets to me when police exist. So and that's, you know, so yeah, it was effective. That's the vibe here.
Yeah.
It was a great horror part of this film because it felt very real. I was like, oh man, that was like honestly genuinely one of the scariest parts of the film was just that. And it's so fast and he's so confused and he's so bewildered.
Yeah.
Like, and we're kind of thought?
As the audience, like put in the same shoes where we're just like, oh my God, what? You don't even know what the documents sign. You don't know if they talk to your wife. Why are you talking to them and trusting them? And yeah. I guess it's like you don't have any other choice, but also what? And it, yeah.
Especially you're in a different country and it's like, you know, we've had Foxy Noxy. She was overseas and her whole case blew up. Like it causes a whole extra, you know, drama because you don't even know what their laws are. And mm-hmm. what do you get as a foreigner?
Yeah.
You know? So it's super scary. And, so he learns that he's being sentenced to death. And the grim reality intensifies when the country's eye for an eye tradition is unveiled, indicating that a family member of the victim will execute him. In this case, the son of the man that he killed will kill him. And they're like, lucky for you, he does have a son. That's what they say to him. They're like, lucky, because if they didn't, it would have to be one of our guys substituting in. So good for you.
I don't know how that's lucky because he was a 9-year-old kid.
Yeah, exactly. That's like how twisted it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Here, the film starts to dive into science fiction elements as James discovers that his demise won't come directly. Instead, a clone identical to him in memories, flesh, and emotions will meet its end. So they put him in this like clear box and they fill it up with this red liquid. Almost kind of looks like wax.
It does look like wax.
Yeah. And which, you know, is kind of like a mold. And then they somehow make him, and he will have memories up until the cloning process. So the James that is the clone, what he remembers is being arrested and told he's going to die.
Yeah,
because they need his reaction to be real so that the family believes him. So it's also this manipulation of the people who are already victims of this process.
Yeah. And what's weird is like he's in the room when it happens, so it's like is it like, how do they not see them? I get it, it's a movie, it's just I just don't get how anyone could even feel fulfilled in that vengeance. Right. When they see that man who is the one who actually did it, like they live here. They probably are familiar with this awful process. And yeah, it's just wild.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's just it. Cause it's a farce. Like the whole thing is a farce. And I think that just kind of starts to reveal the flaws in the process and that it's clearly not what they're saying it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not really about justice at all. No. And that's the thing. So yes, as Kat just mentioned, from a distance, James and M are witnessing the unsettling spectacle of his clone being killed by this young boy. And M is inconsolable, while James is enticed by the situation, looking on detached as his body is mutilated in an act of vengeance. And he immediately goes home and hides his passport. Because he doesn't want to leave. So it has unlocked something in him, a freedom, and something that he was only able to access with his wife's money.
Yep.
Which is a big deal for that. So yeah. Gabby and Albin later expose the truth that they have gone through the same process and return to this resort every year to wreak havoc on the local populace and abuse their power. It's so fun. And they're actually a part of an elite group of rich people who've all died in this process. And they are a disgusting group that James desperately wants to be a part of. And he spends the film working to satisfy their needs to fit in,
yep.
to belong and be one of them.
He wants to be a rich man so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also like every time, like everyone's so very focused on him because he's the new toy, right? He's a new plaything. And every time he does something proper, right, or what they want, they're excited and they pamper him, and it's an attention and interest that he doesn't get elsewhere because he's a failing writer and he's always been failing. So the film unfolds in a hallucinogenic cautionary tale of the lengths the ruling class will go to indulge their insatiable violent desires, and the movie is wrought with psychedelic sequences, orgies that leave much to be desired, wanton murder, and a descent into madness for James, who through the moments with the cult-like group slowly begins losing the thread. And like his film Possessor, Cronenberg doesn't focus on the mechanics or reality of this sci-fi technology, but rather on the ethics and rational use case for the technology, right? This, like we said with Possessor, this technology obviously doesn't exist, but if it did, it's not a far cry from reality.
Oh, I imagine, yeah. And if honestly, if it does, I have no doubt rich people are already cloning themselves if it does exist. If it's like on the list of things we just don't know about as the public, I don't know. But
yeah,
like that's how they would use it. Absolutely. Or for, as we saw in Possessor, assassinations.
Yeah, and like we covered the islands on one of our first ever episodes that was video. And that it has that whole conversation about, you know, the ethics of cloning and the odds of what it would be used for and what it kind of is used for now. And similarly to what we were saying in Possessor, or just anytime we're talking about technology, right, there is a financial, what is the word I'm looking for? Like it's inaccessible, like it'd be too expensive. Yeah, it's a barrier. So even if it existed, it just by default would only be accessible to rich people because it would be too high of a price. So even though people who actually need it, like they do right now when they need real life saving drugs, ooh, what a surprise they would do this. So his first wild night out with the group finds them all once again arrested for murder. It's like a crazy, it's very Manson family. Like they barge into this guy's house and he's like a diplomat. And they just shoot up the place and they take all his stuff and they end up murdering people. Oops, by accident, but guess what? Who cares? We'll just get remade. So they're... It, what follows is a scene that teases accountability and responsibility, and the group believes they'll be cloned and released only to be executed together, screaming for their lives. It's like chaos. As you see their, like, their eyes finally realize, like, oh, like in the scenes before that, they're like laughing and they're like, oh, it's going to be what we'll sign the papers, we'll give them the money and we'll get back to our lives. And then they're screaming and they're being, you know, their heads cut off. And then it pans over and, you know, watching them and jeering from the stands is the group in on the execution all along, because money wins every time.
Yep.
So that's one of the first like twists. And it was pretty funny. Because I was like, of course, thank you. Yeah. Because I was like, ooh, oh, that feels good. Oh, now it feels bad.
Immediately bad again. Ooh.
Oh, I felt so, you did it, Brandon. Yeah. James is subjected to abuse and torment as the new plaything for this group. And more importantly, Gabby. Right. Yeah. Through their coercion, he beats one of his clones nearly to death after being convinced it was the investigator responsible for his first arrest. He's shot in the leg while trying to escape them. He's forced to fight and asked to execute another clone of his, this one domesticated and dog-like. And in the end, James murders the dog him and becomes reborn, suckling at the teat of his mistress, Gabby. And it's weird, but it's not unlike other horror rich people movies.
Yeah.
If anything, it's subdued. Yeah. That's the one thing I will say. As absurd and gross as the film was, it was pretty subdued compared to other things I've read about.
Yeah.
And heard about. So I was like, you're playing nice.
Yeah.
Honestly. And when the group boards the bus the next day, ready to return to their normal mundane lives, James sits back, distant and broken. And we assume he gets on the plane and somehow returns to his life and his rich, forgiving wife. Only we then see James on the beach of the resort, subjected to monsoon-level torrential downpour, which works to wash him clean of his sins. However, the theory folks have about James is that the real James never leaves the island because he is unable to return, having been so significantly changed by this process, right? He's been broken down into pieces. And since he himself is not rich, he cannot wear the mask that the others do. He never was going to be.
Yeah.
he was never going to be with them. And he was just another toy, disposable. And now he must live with the consequences of his actions and the weight of them, right? And so when James packs his bag to leave, there are three urns. So every time they kill a clone, he gets an urn of them.
Yeah.
But there were five Jameses. So what? So first we have the original James, who we believe is still on the island in the end. We have the first clone to be executed by the young boy. We have the clone in the group execution, the clone beaten by OG James under the guise of being the investigator. And finally the dog James.
Yeah,
dog boy James, with only three urns and three confirmed on screen deaths, that leaves one lone James missing from this equation. So the theory is that the James who boards the plane is actually the investigator James, who was beaten because though he was severely beaten, he isn't killed, since James runs away after realizing the truth that it was him. Because that's another one of the twists that happens to him.
Yeah.
And it's when he starts to realize that they're playing with him. Because it was a gag on him.
It's only fun if it's not him.
Yeah, it was fun when it was somebody else, but now it's his own body that he's hurting. And he's like, whoa, wait a second, y'all don't care about me? And they're like, oh, honey, we don't care about anything.
Yeah.
And he tries to leave, and that's when he gets shot in the leg. The James at the airport sports the same cuts and injuries that the James would have had, while the James on the beach does not.
Yeah.
So he's clearly the investigator James. And the airport James also does not limp despite being shot earlier in the leg. And we don't know if Beach James is limping because he's lounging on the chair.
Down.
He's just sitting and enjoying rain.
Let the rain fall down.
I'm coming clean. That's him.
Yep.
It's him. Rain. So yeah. In an article on Screen Rant titled James at the End of Infinity Pool Wasn't the Real James, it was very helpful, they explain the significance of the numbers 3 and 5 and why they help to confirm this theory. So if you care, they say throughout Infinity Pool, there are specific references to the numbers 3 and 5 correlating to the number of Jameses seen in the film. James packs 3 urns before leaving the resort for the final time, and each of these curious souvenirs represents a James that has died, though some of them, like the one James beat, doesn't have on-screen deaths, like I said. He also stands under signs for Terminals 3 and Terminal 5 at the airport, and his room number is 305 at the resort, suggesting that the twist is revealed early, suggesting the twist revealed earlier and implying that though 3 Jameses died, 5 are created in total. So that's your little explanation of what happened at the end, because I was also like, wait, what? Where is it? What? Who's? That's not him.
Yeah.
I will say it wasn't brought up, but I had like this moment where, because like one of the characters in the weird rich cult is like, how do we know we're not the clones? You know? Which totally valid, but I refuse to believe that, because then it's like almost giving them the benefit of the doubt, because then it's like, oh, this is just a clone of you who's doing it, not the real you. Like, you wouldn't actually have the capacity for evil.
Yeah.
So I don't agree with that one, but maybe you do.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the lifestyles of the rich and the famous. So I was complaining. We've had many.
Sounds like money doesn't buy happiness, it only buys comfort.
So weird. We've had many horror films that criticize the 1%. Some of them are disgusting and brash, like Society and Triangle of Sadness. Others are brilliant, charming satire, like The Menu or Ready or Not, which two films I really wholeheartedly enjoy. Infinity Pool, though, very much a film criticizing the rich, accompanies that theme with a critique of the system that enables their behavior. What sets this film apart from those others is Lee Tolka and their bizarre customs specifically, right? So the system, which lures the elite rich to their islands, locking them away as a taunt, is also at fault, right? Because what can you expect of this demographic who's never been told no to do when they're told not to do something? Of course they're going to leave. So the cloning technology incentivizes abuse of the local population. And yes, the rich people are monsters, murderers, and childish, and no doubt the villains of the story. But so too are the police force and the resort owners.
Yeah.
So they have profited off of this violence and turned murder into a business venture. The executions are as much of a performance as the system itself. A symbol is killed, but the institutions remain the same. So, we killed a clone, but he's still walking around doing murders. Like, he didn't hesitate to kill again. Like, okay, we haven't, there's not, justice was not the point, right? And because the question is, like, how could killing a clone of the person responsible ever be considered justice for the families of the lost? Like you mentioned, Kat, like, they're seeing this person, right? They know that it's, because it's not for them. That's not what it's about.
And it was also just like, and the fact that they do it where they have like, they basically kind of force these kids also to like murder, and like that fundamentally changes a person. Like, they're as a state inflicting harm on these kids additionally that like just lost their dad. Like, there's so many layers to that. It's just like super devastating and gross.
Yeah, I actually thought of there's an episode of Doctor Who I was telling Kat about where there's a resort. It's an all-inclusive resort that they go to, and it's on an uninhabitable planet that's full of like monsters that are there because the place was made uninhabitable by like nuclear waste and other climate change horrors. And the whole thing was that they would lure rich people to this resort so they can make enough money so that they can colonize, kind of. It's not colonized though, it's like, because they're gonna make it so that the air could be breathed and all that other stuff. Then they would own a planet that had been previously discarded. So it's like this long con to own this place.
Yeah.
And ignoring the natives there who had to evolve to survive. So it's like the same thing. And it did it better. Yeah. It wasn't even like a great episode. It was actually, I didn't like it. So even if the people at the resort are bringing in money, is it making it to the economy and the citizens most affected by this violence? No. Or is it just stuck lining the pockets of the government and police of Lítoka? Yes. Right. Yeah. How much of that system is understood by the natives and how much is a secret underground get rich quick scheme of those in power? Right. If Lítoka has access to this technology, why aren't they using it on their own people?
Yeah.
Why can't we bring back the man James ran over instead of letting James and the others kill more people? Because that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. And just as I felt in watching the first season of White Lotus, I wonder at the scenes that follow the departure of the attendees, which is the intent, to be fair, especially of White Lotus.
Yeah.
Like they, like the most heartbreaking thing for me in the first season of White Lotus is the boy who was convinced to like steal from the rich white people. And then you never see him again. All you're told in one line that he's arrested, but we know the context of the impact of that because, you know, we've heard about his family and all those other struggles, but we never hear it from him again. And again, that's the point. So when the rich return to their lives of harming people indirectly instead, what happens to the people left behind? For all the imagery Cronenberg left seared into our minds, I am left only with the tickling darkness of what we don't see. Right, the people that we don't learn about and the lives that are changed forever. And by focusing on James and his journey of realizing that he will never belong with these people, we've limited the story and the audience's ability to sympathize. We're left with no winners, no hope, and no resolution.
Yeah.
James, another victim of the rich elite, is left in the rain or on a plane, never held accountable for his own actions. And viewers are left asking, what did that give me that I didn't already have?
Yeah.
I know the rich people suck. Okay. Anyone who doesn't isn't going to be like, wow.
Yeah.
Right. This film is saying something. So there's something that I was thinking as I was reading like the different reviews of the film and even like the description of the film itself. They throw out the word hedonism a lot. And I came to this conclusion that I'm a fan of hedonism, but only from a nihilistic point of view and not for the careless rich. Yeah. I think it could be a wonderful thing. I love hedonism when it's by regular people. So every review I found of the film mentions this idea of hedonism, which the plot is undoubtedly about following this group composed of soulless harpies, gluttonous for violence and control, which only slightly gives them pleasure, attempting release from reality, right? Only is it any different from reality? So that's the point that I had a problem with, right? So sure, the group is killing people in cold blood, but the 1% do that every day. Only the blood isn't literally on their hands.
Yeah.
Right. It was in this exploration of what hedonism looks like for the rich that I had this idea. And you may recall in a previous episode of Ghouls, where we talked about the show Alice in Borderlands, that I celebrated the idea of hedonism. Specifically, I appreciated the freedom that came with the hedonism of these characters who, in the shadow of impending death and hopelessness, still found space for pleasure. That they sought that out in the midst of darkness. Like when you're not promised tomorrow, if your answer is, okay, I'm going to live life to the fullest, that's different. Like it's just a different nihilistic approach. It's like freeing, you know? And I realized that hedonism becomes harmful when wielded by the rich specifically, right? Because for lower income, minority, or the other 99% of the population, their hedonistic acts have a cap on the damage that they can do to others. Right. It's not to say they can't do harm. Right. But their harm is small scale. Their actions chump change in comparison to the damage a rich person's hedonism can bring about. Right. Like you can absolutely murder someone and that's going to impact that family and it's going to have this, you know, reverberation. But you're not murdering entire communities.
Yeah.
Right. Like in not having any accountability.
Yeah. Right?
So
you're more likely to have accountability if anything.
Yeah. Like, someone's going to stop you.
Yeah.
So because they have money, their pursuits are limitless. And so the reach for them becomes limitless too. Like addiction, they will find themselves constantly striving for that next high, a high bigger than the one before. And because they have money and power, they can reach for anything, even the death of Native peoples for their own amusement. Right? Mm-hmm. Their money means that the reverberations of their action reach farther than any one regular human could strive for. And their money unsettles nations, murders innocents, robs people of their humanity, and devastates our planet mm-hmm. on the regular. Right? An impact that the film comes nowhere near covering. It leaves it in the dust, right? Where other successful science fiction films like They Clone Tyrone, Get Out, and Us that we covered in this series, where they absurdify reality to make it more palatable, exaggerating everyday harm into something grotesque and impossible, Infinity Pool offers a diluted version of reality that leaves us just as hopeless and uninformed as reality, right? By keeping mm-hmm. so much of the harm in the dark, Cronenberg has robbed his viewers of a true horror story, leaving us, like James, soaked through to the bone and with nothing to show for it. Mm-hmm. And so much of the film is Cronenberg grappling with his own insecurities, right? He centers a white man struggling with writer's block, suffocating under the shadow of a father figure, and itching to fit into a group of people out of his league, right? And as much as those fears and insecurities are valid, they are just as far removed from the public understanding of pain as the plot itself. So sorry, but I hashtag can't relate, Nepo baby. That's my thesis is, I get what you're saying. I just don't care. I don't care about you in that way, dude.
Yeah, ooh, it's sorry. A whole thing.
Ooh, sorry, people compare you to your dad.
Hashtag, you have a dad?
Yeah. Father? Never heard of it.
Yeah.
What is that?
I say respectfully.
I say disrespectfully.
So in my section, I'll be approaching from a more like anthropological side today. I know I don't really get into like the history of things, but I'm more like people. Why? Mm-hmm. Is where I'm at with my section. So that's, you're going to pick up on that. I'm just kind of like talking about like kind of like human identity and why people do. So in trying to understand the critiques being made in Infinity Pool of society as a whole, many of them are valid, but I agree with Gabe that the lens and implementation of the critiques got muddy. It felt more like ranting than a political critique, which is valid in its own right. But I think Gabe and I are both wanting it to be more in some ways and less in others.
yes.
So this film was a lot to process, as like Gabe definitely unpacked. But from the beginning, it was really intense. And this intensity made it pass by quickly. I remember like we were watching it. We're like, wow, an hour has already happened. What do you mean? How have I just not blinked this whole time?
yeah, that's very true.
And honestly, after your section, Gabe, I think I don't like the film. But when I wrote this script, I was still very, as I said at the beginning, like kind of hesitant and in all honesty. But as I said, I did notice it had like an impact on me mm-hmm. in that I could relate it to a lot of things in the world and history. And then through that, I just found it interesting because of that. Because I was like, oh, this is like Infinity Pool. Oh, Reagan is like Infinity Pool. You know, like all these mm-hmm. little things that kind of connected. And I was like, all right, cool. I like when you can relate media to what's happening in the real world. I just wish it was done differently. Mm-hmm.
But much of the world is Infinity Pool. That is true.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Because world's gross. And by the end of the section, hopefully you'll have some like next steps on how to hopefully make it the world slightly less gross. But the way this film hit me may be different from what Cronenberg intended. It also may be different from other people's experiences with it. At the very least, it says something interesting about human identity under capitalism, classism, and privilege. In saying what it did, it painted this very grotesque picture of the ways that privilege and wealth under capitalism transform our views of each other, the world, and our own accountability, that our identities under capitalism fundamentally change how we see ourselves and how we treat the world around us. And that by commodifying a place and making a resort, commodifying and dissecting the pieces of a culture, we are removing life from it. We are removing the need for accountability to that place and from accountability to the people who live there full time. And that's like what was missing in this film, is that we don't get to see the people
impacted by this, like you said, Gabe, like
mm-hmm.
we don't get to see the true depth of what life was stolen. We get like 2 seconds and then it's just right back to James.
Mm-hmm. And we get another tease where he has a dream sequence where he thinks the boy is coming back to kill him for good, but he's not.
It's and just also just
kind of guilt.
Yeah. And it's like the guilt is that like he monstrosizes this child with this like creepy smile. Mm-hmm. And it's like, is that how you see the native people? Like, just say that, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
mm. gross, ultimately gross. And through capitalism, by commodifying ourselves and those around us, the same happens, at least when it comes to our perception and value of human life. When everything has a perceived value that can be bought, when everything is hierarchied to pedestal one group above another, we become so detached from care, love, or feeling. So our world and each other become disposable. The rich tourists in this film didn't care about each other or even themselves, and that was drilled home a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They were ready and willing to watch pieces of themselves die with each and every choice that they made, but like at the same time did not actually face any accountability. Like they're like, piece of my soul dies, my body is still here running around.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm bothered, yeah, like look at me, I'm gonna go home and go do harm there and then come back and do this again.
Mm-hmm.
So
I said I have to go home and have to do less harm.
Oh, so inconvenient. My comfort matters more than everyone else's. So in my opinion, this film and like what is happening in it is capitalism and white supremacy at its finest, at its core. It's what it wants to transform us into, or at the very least, it wants us to believe that we have access to the world of the wealthy through wealth. And it wants every American to be willing to sacrifice. I mean, Cronenberg's Canadian. So any honestly Western country to be willing to sacrifice whatever is deemed as less for whatever is deemed as more important. And as an observation of the film and the identity of Brandon Cronenberg embodies, it critiques these issues from a very white male lens. And that is what it is. That is who he is. As Gabe said, it's Olivia Wilde. Like, you know, mm-hmm. he had his lens. He's told his story. They gave him money. He made a film. It said something.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it was, I don't think the ghouls were its target audience, and maybe that's on us, but also, yeah, I just don't think we at ghouls were the audience he was trying to reach. And I don't know who it was, but I don't think it was us. Cause I don't think we liked the film. So, but under the shock value of hedonism and corruption on display, I think the intersection of privilege and wealth is what resonated with me the most about this film, that our main character sees his actions to the promise of that our main character sees his access to the promise of privilege, his access to manifest destiny and freedom from accountability that comes with when wealth and whiteness combine. And he takes it. He's like, mm-hmm. oh, good. All that stuff that I've been denied in my poverty, I finally get access. Goody for me. And my main
critique. Yeah, I didn't already have it being married to this very wealthy woman.
You absolutely.
Know, he was being emasculated. He loves it.
Yeah, I had a hard childhood. My main critique of the film is that the shock value of it makes it easier for the audience to detach themselves from relating to the main character or really any character in the film. The presentation of this concept that is so commonplace, rich harm, white supremacy, like so commonplace. It's a systemic issue. It is an everyday, and it's been transformed in such a fantastical, like kind of ridiculous spectacle that it makes it easy for the viewer to other and dismiss their own accountability to that system. So in the interest of removing the natural instinct to be like, I would never, oh my God, the monster, as like we generally, in like, I don't know. It's just like a thing where when you make the villain unrelatable, you really like allow your audience to be like, I wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine.
Only a monster
would do that. And I'm not a monster because I think I'm a good person. And that's, I've talked about it at length on the ghouls. Mm-hmm. That's not how you should. I offer some alternative perspectives to that idea because I think anyone can do a bad thing. It is all of our personal duties to make sure that we aren't actively doing the bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You are not detached from the reality of what systemic oppression looks like, because if you live in America, if you live in Canada, if you live in the Western world, you are not absolved.
Mm-hmm.
So
you are a player in it, whether you like it or not.
Not the biggest player. The rich can do way more than you. Absolutely. But detaching yourself entirely, like being like, I wouldn't do that. That's a monster human. Just kind of like removes our own ability to think critically about ourselves and to unpack the world around us and our place in it. So the way this film hit me personally was that capitalism and white supremacy's main goal is to detach us from ourselves and isolate us from each other so that harm can mutate and perpetuate like a virus. It wants people who look like me, especially, to sacrifice themselves to the promise of benefiting from the system, from the money, from the power, and to sacrifice our own sense of accountability, identity, and our soul to get it, to devalue human life, to gain more privilege. That is the goal. But the reality is that just like James, we will never be accepted, loved, or cared for by billionaires who don't even care about themselves or human life at its core. That in emulating the oppressor, we will never be granted the acceptance or love or safety, because to become an oppressor is to sacrifice your soul. So whatever that means to you, that's my two cents.
Yes.
So when unpacking James, Gabe got into a little bit, his identity is rooted in a few things. First, his insecurities, specifically around understanding of his masculinity and how he values himself within the world as a man and under the patriarchy. Second, his insecurities around wealth and how he values himself within capitalism as a failed writer. And third, how his whiteness makes him feel entitled to the things that he has been denied to within his points of privilege in his past, because he didn't grow up rich. He just married into it. So his own insecurities around that. And the rich elite see him just like the rich elite see the real poor white people as pawns to perpetuate harm and racism. They're like, good, don't be together, because if you're together, we wouldn't win. We wouldn't, you know, that's the whole point of spreading racism, is so that we cannot join together to overthrow the oppressive forces at play. So unfortunately, we're given a protagonist who was happy benefiting from these pillars of harm until he realized he couldn't like get the benefit, that he could return to being a victim of those same pillars. And after murdering the local farmer with his car, he was ready to accept whatever reality would absolve him of the moral and emotional accountability attached to that action, to absolve him from his feelings of guilt and shame from taking another person's life away forever, anything that would keep him from facing the consequences of his own actions. And he did it because it's easier. What he failed to account for, though, was that the same violence, thoughtlessness, and hatred that he was willing to embody and inflict was just as easily done onto him. And his journey felt familiar in that it was very reminiscent of what it's like to exist in white spaces, where you're encouraged for your embrace of the system, your willingness to look away, your willingness to steady the boat, to keep other white people comfortable. The fear that being uncomfortable because under white supremacy, white comfort is prioritized over any other identity. So when grappling with the weight of what the world is, the impact of literally every single action, word, breath, to understand the passive impact you have every single day just by living in a country that does not give a fuck about human lives, it is easier to just embrace ignorance, to accept that the system and its harm are inevitable, because to deny it means having to grapple with so many uncomfortable thoughts and emotions and requires actions that are even heavier, that is overwhelming and hard, and it's hard to impact the ways your life harms people who you can't even see. It is hard to allow yourself to feel uncomfortable. But the problem is that James chooses to absolve himself from consequences, thinking that the rich will accept him as one of their own and they will protect him. But they don't. They don't care.
He's not one of them. If anything, that he's insulted them by being married to someone rich.
Yeah.
Like the audacity of him operating in the same spaces as them is what led them to trick him in the first place.
Yeah. So like in embracing this path of least resistance, he's facilitating his own demise, which is like the plot in that way is very predictable. Like as Gabe said, like it's not saying anything especially new. Like we knew all this stuff. I more so just present this as like if you are grappling with that in the world and how awful it is and you don't want to be uncomfortable right now. Obviously, there's a difference between being uncomfortable and putting yourself in harm's way. But we need to be uncomfortable right now. That's the only way things will get better. There's an article on Horror Obsessive that kind of like validates some of these points. So it's called Morality and Personal Identity in Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity Pool. And I don't know if I fully agree with it, because I don't think people are inherently evil. I think the world manipulates people into doing bad things, and you can make bad choices mm-hmm. that cause harm. But I don't, like, if the thesis of this film was that underneath everybody is just this awful, disgusting person who just wants to do harm, I don't think that's true.
Yeah. But
it's a little bit with this person. So they say, see, people show you who they really are when they know they won't face any consequences for their actions. And James is no different. When the film begins, he seems like a decent enough guy. But once he realizes he can literally get away with murder, he lets his true color show. He reveals himself to be an utterly contemptible human being. So the nice guy he appeared to be before meeting Gabby was just a facade. And if there's any doubt about that, Infinity Pool confirms it for us in one of its final scenes. After James comes to his senses and realizes how terrible he's become, Gabby and her friends bring him to the clone of himself and tell him to kill it. And Gabby utters a line that basically is our smoking gun that says, it's time for you to shed that disgusting larval mind of yours and find out what kind of creature you really are. With that, the movie shows its hand and lets us know that it is really about what kind of person James is. Granted, Gabby uses the word creature instead of person, but the idea is clearly the same. She wants James to show beneath that facade of goodness and normality, he's actually a horrible person, just like her and her friends. And despite some initial reluctance, he eventually gives in and reveals that he really is just like them. And I don't know if I believe with that last part.
Because, I don't agree with that either.
Yeah, because he does stay. He's forever changed at the end. He's on that beach. He doesn't go home. Yeah. So it's different. But
I also think she doesn't think that she's a creature. She doesn't think she's bad.
Yeah.
So she's twisting him because it's fun. I don't think it's because she's trying to make him her. I agree with you.
Yeah. So I don't know if I agree, but that's just another perspective to kind of just like challenge my thinking, my thoughts.
No, I appreciate it.
So how not to be like James? How can you, human listening here today, including ourselves, not be like James? Because while this question seems silly because of how James is represented in the film, in that he's like a fantastical, ridiculous man, I figured that we could use this as an opportunity to speak on some really real ways that you can value human life presently. If you're like me and Gabe, right now the world is a lot and everything hurts and feels kind of hopeless. And most of the time inside my head is just screaming. This film gave us no hope, and I don't want you to leave this episode feeling the same way.
Yeah.
Ultimately. So essentially, we don't want to let the pillars of harm win, and thus we don't want to be like James. So I offer some resources. There's an activist that I came across recently on TikTok named Ismadu Gwendolyn, and they have this series called Threadings. And I highly recommend a few of them, but specifically the ones You've Been Traumatized into Hating Reading. I Love My Country, She Looks Like Me, Love of Palestine. Drugs Are Fucking Everywhere and We're All Addicted to Comfort. And they just have like this entire essay series where they unpack all of these things and are like very vulnerable and like real about like how hard it is to read and how hard it is to educate ourselves and how hard it is. Like, it's not easy. And the idea is that like we want to look at the seams of who we are as people and around the world and like really understand why unpacking all of this stuff is so difficult, but that like everything in the world is made up and imagine if we make it different. So just some like really powerful ideas there that really resonated with me, that I highly recommend checking out. They also provide, in one of their recent TikToks, they mention a creator called CJ, and they have a similar Substack called Radio Free Nation, and basically also offer resources at linktree.com/lovebroccoli. And the resources under there is Zionism is White Supremacy, Palestine Solidarity Resources. And they offer basically like resources on how to like start activism where you are. So like there's a Within Our Lifetime Rally Toolkit, step-by-step guide to taking action, Workers in Palestine International Call to Action, Black Alliance for Peace, Decolonizing Palestine Reading List, All the Walls Will Fall 2023 Palestine Liberation Resources List, and a Palestine Digital Action Toolkit. And they also provide a link to a book of essays titled National Liberation Fronts that kind of just gives you from 1960 to 1970 by Donald C. Hodges and Robert Elias Abdushanov. And their essays, documents, and interviews that kind of go through revolutions throughout history and like how they succeeded, specifically, I believe, in like Vietnam time period. So like to give you a framework to see that like things have changed before, people have done that work. This is the context clues that you need, as well as like step-by-step framework on how to make meaningful change where you are. I also relink Michaela Loach, climate activist, because their book is just really inspiring and the way they speak is very inspiring. And if you're interested in climate activism, which I hope you are because the world is dying, highly recommend checking that out. There's also a bunch of news content creators, so specifically news from Liney Vanny. They have a petition for Stop Cop City and educate on that way. There's the Wear the Peace clothing that donates to Gaza and also helps you make like a statement socially. They also say like wear kufias and stuff like that, but they have like sweatshirts and other things. They donate literally all the money that they get from that to Palestine directly. So I think they've raised over $300,000 so far just through that line. They also have their TikTok is filled with this like reposting of journalists that are on the ground posting about what's happening in Gaza and Rafah and like the literal genocide. Like there's protesters and things and journalists that they have like reposted. So you can kind of figure out the voices that are there educating about what's happening so that you can better inform yourself. There's context on this book called The Trinity of Fundamentals. Gabe, I think you purchased it. I also purchased it today. There's a video from Viva Palestine Lean who goes over this like kind of in detail of like what the book was. It's an amazing story, but to give you just like a really short blurb, it's The Trinity of Fundamentals follows the story of a 22-year-old Kanaan during his 9 years of hiding from the occupation between 1982 and 1991. And the story of this book is really amazing. So I highly
the story of how it got made is really
yes. And yeah, so I recommend hearing that directly from the original content creator who posted it to further boost that. And then also there is basically for the Congo and everything happening there, there's a link to a Congress petition, essentially like write letters to your Congress people so that your money does not fund what's happening in the Congo right now. Another way to do that is to not buy new phones, buy repurposed phones and repurposed tech. I also link some news-based content creators. So Consciously, Liver the Basement, Angie Marie, and the Black Feminist Collective, among other things. So lots of resources in our section this week if you want to check out our blog. And I can just, yeah, I cannot recommend enough Ismatu Gwendolyn and Threadings. It's just been a really nice series to like unpack my brain and also what's happening in the world. And learning and reading are all forms of revolution. Wherever you start, that is where you need to start. As Michaela Loach said, all of it is little signals that go to the greater of revolution of change and make the mushrooms. So I'm encouraging you to make some mushrooms so you don't leave this film like we did feeling like, oh no, the world, you know?
But it's like, yeah, we know that. Now what?
Yeah. So this is the now what. It gives you some actual things you can do. The sunglasses are too small for my face and they hurt my nose. Don't be a rich man on vacation. This is what this is doing.
Yeah. No, I mean, that also is the theme too, right? It's like, don't pay into resorts.
Don't go to Hawaii. They don't want you there right now. Lahaina is still struggling. Like,
Puerto Rico does not need you. It doesn't. There's a lot of levels to those places, and like if you're going to support a tourism industry, like support the people who are there. Right. Don't go to a place if you're afraid of the people who live there.
That's
a big flag.
Red flag. Don't go to a place before you unpack your own systemic impacts of the world around you, and how you might have biases that make it you not a safe person to go to that place.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, and value other people.
Value human life. Human life. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Don't, yeah.
It's not like, I think it was like a tweet. And it was like, I don't know how to convince you that people's lives matter. I don't know how to convince you of that because it's just such a fundamental thing.
Yeah. Like, it's bizarre I have to do that. I shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
You should know.
Yeah.
I will say, so just in the summarization of this film, like we both have through our analysis of it come to the conclusion we didn't like it very much. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say like it didn't do its job and it wasn't a good film, because it was.
Yeah.
I think it did a great job of doing what it wanted to do, for sure.
Yeah.
It just wasn't for me and I don't care. I will say, Mia Goth was a treasure as always. She is so good at being unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jamie! Just like scream. Oh my God, I can't.
Performances were great in this. Everyone did a great job, like acting wise.
Yeah. And I also love anything Alexander Skarsgård is in. I would say to have like two very hot and very over sexualized characters, the sex scenes and like orgies and other things were so bland. And I don't know if that was the intention.
Yeah.
But I was like, to have two people who, like, especially Mia Goth, who's coming from a series and is still involved in a series that's specifically about the sexualization of women and the empowerment through that. And then to have Alexander Skarsgård, who is like hot, just like always, he's often naked,
yeah.
You know, to have both of them and then not really do anything with them that like feels significant or purposeful. You can't just make Mia Goth naked just because you can, you know? Like, she deserves better than that.
Yeah.
She's made the whole movies about why she's better than that.
Yeah.
But that concludes our New Year, New Me series. We've trudging through that for 2 months. So I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what your favorite film was that we covered. If there's other films where people are renewed in the horror world that you would want to see covered in the future, if there's any upcoming series for the rest of this year you want to see, I've been thinking of some things, and we'll see you when we return. And
yep.
Don't get married.
They'll eat your kids,
or they'll kill you, and then your kid has to kill them, but it's not them because the system sucks.
It's a clone time. That sucks.
Yeah, clone me. Get out of here.
You're telling me you had all the money to clone this random white man and you couldn't have brought my dad back? Like,
yeah, this is, you know what's going to happen? Revolution.
Yeah.
Smells like guillotine in here.
Yeah.
Okay, come on.
I do.
All right. Bye.